Were you into avocado toast before any of your friends? Do you know how to whip up some cashew cream? And do you make your own almond milk? If so, you're our kind of person, and you might be interested in the classes at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, located in the heart of Manhattan. Founded in 1977, NGI is the first culinary school dedicated to healthy cooking to be accredited nationally. Their professional chef's training program is offered full and part-time, and several of our favorite chefs are alumni, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen, Alyssa Wagner of Dimes, and Chloe Coscarelli of By Chloe. Visit the NGI website to learn how you can transform your life and your career.
We are students at Girls Prep, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Claudia Wu, co-founder of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. Carrie Diamond is out today, but we have a special guest host, Gilly Houston.
Hi everybody, again. Second week in a row, practically.
Yeah.
A regular.
Oh yeah, we were out last week. I forgot. We were in San Francisco last week, scouting spaces for possibly having a jubilee out there, which would be really exciting.
Keyword possibly.
Possibly, yes.
Don't I don't want to commit. Anyone.
I'm like very commitment.
Fear of commitment.
Yeah. First, a shout out to our sponsors. Prince Street, the new fresh podcast with a culinary heart from Dean and DeLuca. Baldor Specialty Foods, which curates and delivers the best and freshest foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. And the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, where you can start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today.
So I'm really excited for both of today's guests, because today we have two generations of badass girl bosses who are changing the New York restaurant scene and the world with their latest projects.
Our first guest is Chef Missy Robbins, the talent behind the blazing hot new Italian restaurant in Brooklyn, Lilia. The menu is filled with seasonal antipasti, beautiful fish, and luscious pastas, including a transcendent sheep milk cheese-filled Anglo-Nati, how do you pronounce it?
Angelotti.
I knew I would mess that one up.
It's a tough one.
As Pete Wells wrote in his 3-star review of Lilia in the New York Times, Missy Robbins is cooking pasta again. That is all you need to know. Before Lilia, Missy ran the kitchen at the two Avoces restaurants in Manhattan. She did go to culinary school, but that was after graduating in 1993 from Georgetown University, where she majored in art history and minored in psychology. She's worked with culinary legends like Anne Rosenzweig and even cooked for Barack Obama back when they both lived in Chicago. I'm sure you're sick of hearing that you cook for the Obamas.
A little. I mean, if you ask the Obamas who I am, I'm not sure they would actually know.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I forgot it's a holiday weekend this weekend, and everyone's like, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, I don't know, I'm working. Like,
me too.
Yeah, I know. So,
Cherry Bomb cookbook recipe testing.
Oh yeah, I've been doing that all week.
That sounds like fun.
It can be, until like recipes don't work and you're like, oh no. But anyway, let's talk about you. Congrats on the restaurant. How are things going? You opened
We opened in January,
right? Yeah.
So 4 months old.
Wow.
It's an infant still.
But hopefully you've kind of worked the kinks out now.
The kinks are out. It's been a pretty smooth opening.
I have to say, as
openings go in restaurants, it's been quite smooth.
So what are some of the dishes that people have to try there?
You know, it's so funny. People come in every night and they're like, what should we order? What should we order? What should we order? And it's a fairly large menu. And it's divided into a lot of categories, and there's kind of like meant to be something for everyone. And it's so hard for me to tell people what to order because I develop the menu.
Right.
And everything on there is on there because I like it. Like if I end up not liking it, it either doesn't make it to the menu or it goes off very quickly. You know, pastas really seem to be obviously resonating with people. The malfadini with pink peppercorns and Parmigiano has kind of taken on a life of its own, and the agnolotti people love. I mean, people, it just depends on your mood.
Right.
My favorite kind of go-to are the grilled clams and the grilled calamari. We have a big wood-burning grill, and almost everything comes off of there protein-wise. So that's been really fun to play with, and kind of, I love that stuff.
How are you going to deal with the wood fire in the summer?
It's pretty hot.
Yeah.
I don't know. You just get used to it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, ask my cook. I'm not the one standing directly in front. I'm not the one standing. I stand pretty close. I mean, I'm right next to her. But if you step 1 foot to the right, it's very different. She kind of takes a lot of breaks. She, like, walks back and forth when she doesn't have something cooking. So you just get used to heat in a kitchen.
Why did you name the restaurant Lilia? Is there significance to that name?
It is not my grandmother's name, which everyone thinks. So, yeah, there is significance, actually. We wanted sort of a feminine name, and we went through a lot of names, and I wanted something that sounded fairly Italian and but easy to pronounce, and something that, like, people wouldn't forget or call and be, you know. I've worked in Italian restaurants with very difficult names, and it's challenging. So there were a lot of factors, and I really wanted it to be sort of food-related. It's actually the root of the botanical name for the onion and garlic and family.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
And sort of, for me, the root of all cooking and the base of a lot of our dishes, and I thought it was kind of cool and pretty and looked great graphically.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
Yeah. I wish I had a grandmother named Lilia.
You can name your...
an Italian grandmother.
If you have a kid or a nephew, you can push to name them. The space is beautiful.
Thank you.
It's an old auto garage?
Auto body shop, yeah.
How much, I mean, do you geek out on restaurant design? Were you,
I do.
Super involved?
I'd like to be a designer in my next life. I'm not, like, a designer, but, yeah, I have pretty strong desires and vision of what I like and what I don't like and what I think will look good. And, you know, we were pretty blessed with amazing raw space, so the ceilings are original. We have wood beam ceilings. Those are original. The windows were refurbished from the original. There's natural height. You know, the ceilings, I think, are about 16 feet.
Wow.
It was really important to me. You know, originally the kitchen actually ended up much more open than the original plan. And as we kind of started building and being in the space, we had kind of builders who were flexible. And one of the things that kind of came out of it as we started building and sort of the pass went up, and I was like, I really don't want to close this in anymore. So we left it much more open, and that was really important. And it's really kind of contributed a lot to the vibe of the restaurant, and sort of, we want people to feel like they're coming into our home. It's a very large home, but we want people to feel like they're coming into our home. And I think there's a real connection between the kitchen and the dining room, and people stop by the pass all night long and talk to me. And it's really cool. I think I'll never go back to a closed kitchen again.
I know. Open kitchens were such a trend, and I mean, I can see why. You don't want to be, like, enclosed in a space, you know.
Yeah, I think it's really nice for the staff. Yeah. Also, they really feel a part of it. And, you know, people will stop by and say hi to the cooks. And I think it's just a very cool thing. And you just feel like you're one unit. I think it makes the front of house and back of house staff much closer. You're kind of very integrated, and it's just different. It's great.
Yeah, it's like a show for the diners as well.
They love it. People love it.
So previous to Lilia, you were at Avoce, which... you had some Michelin stars.
I did.
You know, no big deal.
Yeah.
But you took a break after that.
I did.
Why?
Why? The magic question. Well, the break ended up being much longer than anticipated. And I think when I decided to leave Avoce, you know, I left for various reasons, and none of them were bad. It was just sort of time for me to move on. And I wasn't really 100% sure what I wanted to do, and I could have very easily gone and gotten another job, or found partners right off the bat, or done whatever. And I sort of made a decision that was maybe not the most intelligent decision in the world, but I just said, I'm not going to do anything before I leave. I'm not going to talk to anyone. I'm not going to look. I had given a very long notice at Avoce, and people didn't believe me. People kept saying, like, you must be doing something. You're just, you know, restaurants have gotten so weird and secretive, and everyone always has secret projects going on. And it wasn't about that. I just really kind of wanted some time and space. I'd been cooking for 20 years, really with no real break except kind of normal vacations, and a voce was a very intense job for me. I ran two restaurants and I worked a lot and I had two really, really big teams. And so I kind of committed to this, like, well, I'll take a year maximum. And, you know, 6 months goes by, and then I traveled a little bit after that. And then I got back and sort of started to get serious about what I wanted to do. And I was meeting with people a lot and just sort of trying to figure it out. And it took a lot longer to figure it out than I anticipated. And then once I sort of figured it out, the build out of Lilia took a lot longer than it was supposed to. So I left Avoce in May 2013. It is May 2016.
Wow. So. But that's always so nice to take a break. Where are some places that you travel to?
I was in Italy a little bit. And I was in Asia for a little bit. I mean, I wasn't away for like a year. I was away for a couple months. And also a lot on, you know, I spent a lot of time in the North Fork. I have friends out there and just kind of relaxed a lot. I lived like a normal person for the first time in my life. I went out to dinner with civilian friends that don't work in the business. I saw my family a lot, which was really nice. You know, I could say yes to weddings without worrying about, like, it was really a nice time for me. And it's made me sort of a better chef today and a better restaurant owner. I don't think that I'd be as good as I am right now internally, and as a manager and as a leader if I hadn't taken the time off. And that's, again, not why I did it, but it gave me just a lot of time to reflect. It gave me a lot of time to reflect on cooking and food. And the food that I'm cooking today is very different than what I cooked at Avoce. It sort of still has the same heart and soul and a lot of the same ingredients, most of the same ingredients. But it's definitely stripped down quite a bit and definitely sort of just a little rawer and a little bit just simpler.
So why Italian? I know you lived in Italy for a couple months when you were 29. You took a break from working in restaurants in the States.
Italy, I am not Italian.
Yeah.
There, and I'm not, you know, I've never tried to act like I was Italian. I think in my heart, I believe I'm Italian. It's always sort of resonated with me. It's really strange. I grew up in New Haven, Connecticut, and it's a very Italian-American community there.
Oh, yeah, their pizza,
yes.
Pizza there is no joke.
What's your favorite?
I don't know, but we went to Yale to the farm, mm-hmm. Sustainable Farm Project up there, and they took us to this restaurant, and they were debating where the best pizza in
Well, you are
New Haven,
like, if you're from New Haven, you have very specific opinions.
Yeah, we don't know.
Am a Sally's person, who has sort of turned into a modern person because modern pizza just has less weights and their pizza's really good. But Sally's is my truest first love, I think. I just grew up in that community. I grew up eating a lot of baked ziti and eggplant parm and meatball subs and stuff like that. And I that's what I thought Italian food was. I didn't know any differently. And then I traveled to Italy with my family a few times, and I traveled after college. And when I started cooking, I kind of grew up in the so-called new American world and of cooking, but Italian ingredients always resonated with me. Olive oils and ricotta cheeses and mozzarellas and all that stuff really kind of spoke to me. And when it came time to go abroad, like, I really wanted to go abroad. And when I was an art history major, you mentioned I went to Georgetown. I was supposed to go. Georgetown has an unbelievable program in right outside of Florence. They have their own villa, and they take 16 people a semester. And I got into the program, and then I bailed. And I always sort of regretted it. And I was like, what's wrong with me? And so when it kind of came time to go abroad, it was a little bit of, like, retribution. And I was like, I kind of feel like I belong in Italy. And I just – it, you know, the choices sort of are like, you go to Italy or France. And France never really had that impact on me. So I kind of picked up and left, and I didn't understand regional Italian cooking. I didn't really know what that meant, and I really, like, dived right into it. It was really amazing. I ended up working for a month in Friuli, which is all the way up north, and I knew nothing about it. I didn't know what that meant. The ingredients are different. The wines are different. Everything's different. It was amazing. And
did
that's,
you just, like, pick a spot on the map and be like,
no. The first two places I went, I was in Tuscany and Emilia Romagna at the beginning. And, Anne Rosenzweig, who I'd worked with, she and her husband had some connections there, and they set me up with my first two restaurants. And then, I was supposed to go somewhere else, and, you know, it was before kind of texting and cell phones were at your disposal every minute of the day. And I had sort of a miscommunication and language barrier with the guy I was supposed to work with, and he didn't have room in the kitchen, but Italians are the most hospitable people in the world. And they, he said, "Where I'll send you to a friend's place. Where do you want to go?" And I'm like, this young woman in Italy, I had no idea. And I was like, I'll go anywhere. I just want to learn. It doesn't really matter. And he sent me to this place in Friuli who had just gotten their first Michelin star.
Oh, wow.
And it was a family run place that had been in their family for, I mean, 100 years, I want to say.
Wow.
And this current generation was a father, a husband and wife, father, and then their kids who were closer in age to me. And the mother and the son were in the kitchen, and the father and the daughter were in the dining room. And the son had just started cooking, and he is now one of the most progressive chefs in Italy. So it's a really cool story. But they introduced me to grappa. They took me to the Nonino estate on my first night to cook a private dinner. I had no idea where I was going. And now Nonino, I understand it so well. And so, you know, it was a fabulous experience all around.
Wow, that's amazing. And I know we were talking before about this, but, you know, it's something that I recommend to everyone to do, you know.
It was the best experience of my life, and not just the food part.
Yeah.
I mean, really just like immersing yourself in a culture and learning a language and being so far out of your comfort zone. And again, it was before cell phones and texting. If you did that today, you could be texting your friends in the States all day long and Instagram and all that stuff. And I didn't have any of that. So obviously I felt very, very alone a lot of the time, but I also explored all the time. And it wasn't about social media and it wasn't about being in touch with your friends. It was about really kind of immersing yourself in this whole other world. And after work, I would go by myself to these wine bars and I would sit and I would talk to the owners and I would try and speak Italian very, very poorly. and it was just a really, it was a really cool time in my life. And I wish, I was telling you before, I wish I had stayed longer and I wish I had done it a little differently, but I do feel like I got the understanding of different cultures. And I worked for the same family in two different regions and they cooked completely differently and they were the same family.
Wow,
so
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And they had a Michelin star. I mean,
that restaurant, yeah, in Friuli had a Michelin star and they had just gotten it and they were very tense about it. I mean, Michelin stars in Italy mean
a curse a little bit. No?
Yeah, they mean, yeah. And I think, you know, one of the freeing things about Lilia is that, you know, we don't talk about stars and we don't, that's not why the restaurant was developed. The restaurant was developed to have, you know, regulars and make people want to crave our food and the space and really come and enjoy, like I said, sort of our home. And never do my partners and I sit around talking about Michelin stars and New York Times stars. And so when the 3-star review came out, it was really sort of special because it's not like we sat around and said, we have to do these 7 elements to make sure we get 3 stars. It just happened. And that's kind of what made it really cool that Pete Wells just loved the food and he loved the vibe and he had a good time. And we didn't plan for it. And I think that was a pretty amazing thing for us. And that's the same with Michelin. Like, if we happen to get a Michelin star at Lilia, then that's fantastic. If we don't, we have a really busy restaurant that people seem really happy coming to. And that's the most important thing. And that's not the world I come from. I mean, Avoce was driven by Michelin stars. And I used to get very nervous when the Michelin guide came out that I might lose a star that year. And what happens if I lose a star in one restaurant and not the other? And how is that team going to feel versus the other team? And like, that was always a thing. And when I was in Chicago at Spiaggia, Michelin hadn't come there yet, but it was very driven by European philosophy of Michelin stars. And that's what the restaurant was built on. So I come from that world. But I have to say it's pretty cool not thinking about it now and just kind of cooking because you want to cook.
Yeah. And speaking about neighborhood spots, you guys just opened a coffee bar, right?
We opened the coffee bar a month after we opened the restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been open for a few months. And yeah, it's a cafe adjacent to the bar, adjacent to the restaurant. We do Italian pastries and coffee in the morning. And then at night, it turns into a little aperitivo bar.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's fun.
So I did try and get check the reservation page, and I think June 19th was the first open slot.
Did you make a reservation?
No, I was just curious to see when the first available slot would be. June 19th at
really?
Like 10 p.m.
Is that true? I try not to look.
What's the best way to get a reservation there? Just keep checking?
Yeah, we do reservations 30 days to the date. And apparently they go, I've heard people waking up to make reservations. We do take walk-ins, and we also we take walk-ins at the bar. So we have 12 seats at the bar, and they are generally full all night, but that's a great way to come experience it. And it's the same experience, and people seem to love it. And we just added 36 seats outside as which are all walk-ins.
Summer.
Yeah. So there are ways to eat there. I don't know. If you have a friend that works at Lilia, you might be able to get a reservation.
If you're willing to work in front of a grill,
you can come work the grill. You come work the grill, you can get a reservation.
All right. So now we're going to go into our speed round.
Great.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee. Espresso only.
Only. So Italian. What's in your refrigerator right now?
A lot of bubbly.
Ooh. Why? Are you having a party this weekend?
No, I just was very graciously blessed with a lot of bottles when we opened, and I finally brought them home.
Amazing. How do you like your eggs?
Sunny side up.
What's the one thing you'd never eat?
Tuna fish in a can with mayonnaise.
What's your favorite kitchen tool?
My pasta tool, all my pasta equipment.
What's your go-to snack?
These days, I'm kind of a bread and butter girl these days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who makes your bread?
Amy's Bread.
Oh, nice.
She makes this amazing sesame rustic bread for us.
Is it special, like your special bread?
It's not my special bread, but apparently many years ago after Amy met with me, and I complained that they didn't have enough Italian selection that was inexpensive, they developed this bread.
Oh.
And I did not find out that it was because of me until I was consulting with Cork Buzz next door to Amy's, and we started using their bread. And I was like, oh, this is what we want. And they're like, oh, well, you know, we made this because of you. So now I feel really lucky to work with them. Their bread's awesome. And we make this Parmigiano butter that goes with our prosciutto. You've had it. You're shaking your head.
Gilly's eating that.
And that's kind of my go-to snack right now.
Amazing.
Parm butter on bread. Very healthy.
All right. Where's
and ice cream. I'm
ice
a big
cream?
Ice cream.
Oh, I heard you have a soft serve gelato.
We do have soft serve.
At Lilia? Yeah.
We do have soft serve chocolate, vanilla, and we do a lot of toppings with them.
Yum. What's the worst job you've ever had?
Wow. Can I take the fifth on that?
Okay.
I've actually never had a bad job. I've actually chosen my jobs very, very, very selectively, and I have actually liked all of my jobs.
That's a good answer.
I know it sounds like a not true answer, but it's true.
Where do you want to travel to next?
I'd actually love to go to Paris. I have not been to Paris since I was 22 years old.
Oh, well, and it's probably like changed a little bit.
You think so? And I am due for a major, major trip to Italy, and I'm hoping like Sicily, Sardinia, and a lot of the South where I've not spent a lot of time.
That's where I'm going. Maybe I'll see you there.
Great. When are you going?
I'm going.
Pack me in your suitcase.
End of June and into July.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It'll be good. On a sailboat.
What?
Yeah.
I want to go on that trip.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it off the air, but thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back with part two of this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Prince Street, Dean and DeLuca's monthly podcast dedicated to the delicious and infinite connections between people and food. Each new Prince Street podcast features special guests, field reports, and meals from around the world. Editor-in-Chief Howie Kahn hosts the show, featuring segments from correspondents such as Griffin Dunn, Jay McInerney, Eden Grinchpan, and Sierra Tishkart. Download Prince Street on iTunes and online at livefromprincestreet.com. Prince Street, a fresh new podcast with a culinary heart.
Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. Our next guest is calling us from her high school in South Carolina. Katie Stagliano was just 9 years old when she started Katie's Crops, a nonprofit organization that provides grants to help other children and young adults start vegetable gardens to grow fresh food for those in need. Katie's Crops today operates 100 youth-run gardens in 37 states, and her army of young gardeners has donated thousands of pounds of fresh produce to food pantries, soup kitchens, and direct gifts. Katie, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, I hope you're not cutting class to call in today.
I actually just took my last exam, so it's officially summer for
me. Oh my gosh, congratulations. That's really exciting.
Thank you.
The one thing I really miss about being in school is that feeling of finally being on summer break. That's like the best feeling in the world. I don't think anything else matches it in life.
It honestly is the best feeling. I got out and I was like, I have the entire summer now. And I went to the garden and it was so warm outside. It was great.
That sounds perfect. And I'm not surprised that the first thing you did was go straight to the garden. So what grade are you finishing up?
I just finished my junior year.
Your junior year? That's
yes.
Really exciting and scary, because I'm sure you're terrified to be a senior next year.
I'm honestly so scared because yeah. It seems that I have to go to college and then like, get a job, and everything's just happening so fast.
It's a scary time for sure. What are your plans for college? Do you already have your eye on anything? And
I have to start looking at colleges over the summer. I'm not 100% sure where I want to go, but I'm thinking if I stay closer to home, I'll be able to still go to some of the Katie's Crops dinners.
Totally.
And the gardens and things like that, so I'll feel more connected with everything like that.
Definitely. Well, it's safe to say that all of us at Cherry Bomb are very impressed by how much you've accomplished at your age. I know when I was 17, I was too busy like obsessing over boys and whether or not I'd get a role I wanted in the school play to think about starting this amazing organization that's helping to kind of change the world for the better. So where did that idea for Katie's Crops begin, and what was your inspiration?
So the idea for Katie's Crops actually began when I was in the third grade and I received a tiny cabbage seedling as a part of a school project. And I took the seedling home, I planted it in my backyard with my little brother, and every day after school I would water and weed around this tiny cabbage until eventually it had grown to be a 40-pound cabbage.
Wow.
And I was blown away. I was only 9 years old at the time, and I wasn't quite sure what to do with this 40-pound cabbage that was in my backyard.
I've definitely seen a photo of you holding that cabbage when you're just a tiny little.
It was honestly the size of my brother.
Yeah.
It was huge.
It's kind of crazy. We'll tweet that later, anyone who wants to go check out that picture of Katie and the massive cabbage.
So my dad had always told me not to waste, and every night when I would sit down to the table, he would tell me how lucky I was to have a fresh, healthy meal in front of me, because there are some kids and families who go to bed hungry. And then my dad explained that there are places called soup kitchens where these families could go and they could receive what might be their only meal of the day. And after hearing that, I decided that I wanted to donate my cabbage to a soup kitchen where it could help to feed families who relied on it for what might be their only meal of the day.
Amazing.
It was a really incredible experience for me because at 9 years old, I wasn't aware of how big of an issue hunger was, not only in my community, but all across the country, and how it affected families just like mine who might have fallen down in hard times and now relied on soup kitchens and emergency food programs to get something to eat.
Totally. I mean, most 9-year-olds aren't aware of too much else going on besides their own little world. So was that something you were raised on? Was your family really, interested in this kind of activism and gardening and food in general?
When I was younger, I'd had a small salad garden in my backyard, but we hadn't really gotten involved with gardening until I planted my cabbage and donated it to the soup kitchen. And then once I had donated my cabbage to the soup kitchen and I had helped to feed 275 people with it, I thought, well, if one cabbage can feed 275 people, then imagine how many people an entire garden could help to feed. And so that's really what got me started with gardening. But if it wasn't for my parents and their constant support, when I was just 9 years old, I had all these huge plans and I wanted to start gardens and donate the produce. And I felt like there was nothing that I couldn't do without my parents' support. So if it wasn't for them, I don't think I would be where I am today.
Yeah. What was your family and your friends' response when you at that age were kind of had this grand idea for this big project that you wanted to do?
My parents and my friends and my family were all so supportive, and they were all out there to help at the gardens, and they still continue to help at the gardens today and at the dinners. And they've just always been there for me and everything. They've been like, oh, this is a great idea. They've gotten on board with it, and they've helped me make it happen.
Awesome. So can you explain to the people listening a little bit more about what Katie's Crops does and how the gardens came to be?
So Katie's Crops, we start vegetable gardens and donate the produce to feed those in need. And we actually just hit 100 vegetable gardens in over 35 states across the United States this spring. And all of these gardens are run by youth ages 9 to 16. And we have a cycle where kids can apply to become a Katie's Crops grower. And when they join the Katie's Crops growing family, we provide the funds for them to start a garden and donate the produce to those in need in their community. And we also do monthly dinners called the Katie's Crops Dinners. We actually have one tonight. And we serve anywhere from 150 to 200 people in need in my community here in Somerville, South Carolina. And we use the fresh produce from the garden. And it's a time where my friends and volunteers come together and we cook a meal for anyone in need in the community.
That is awesome. I think me and Claudia would both love to be at one of those one day.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. We also definitely come to one.
Yeah, a little road trip. I'm
South
down.
South Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a lot for anyone to handle, much less someone who's, you know, dealing with schoolwork and AP tests and finals and all that. So how the heck do you balance all of this, like, with your schoolwork and with just being a teen and having friends and having fun?
It sometimes is a very hard balancing act to figure out how to get everything done in the amount of time. It feels like time is the biggest obstacle for us because there's never enough time in the day to get everything done that you want to. But my school is so incredible, and they understand if I miss class and things like that to go on trips for Katie's Crops and to go work in the garden and speak to people and things like that, and along with sports teams and things like that. So everyone's really amazing and understanding when I miss things and I'm out of town and things like that. I'm not honestly sure how it happens. I think everything just comes together sometimes, and it just finds a way.
Totally. So what are some of your personal favorite things to grow and cook with? Do you like to cook a lot?
I actually have learned to love to cook through Katie's Crops, especially through the dinners, when we've gotten to try all these new and different things with fresh vegetables from the garden. And I think when you're cooking with fresh food, it's so delicious, especially things that you've grown yourself. To be able to grow it and cook it is one of my favorite things. I think I like to cook eggplant the most, eggplant farm.
Mm. Yeah.
And things like that. We grow Ichiban eggplant, and it's honestly one of my favorite things.
Awesome. So how did the dinners start, and how far along after you started Katie's Crops did you get the idea to do these dinners in your community?
The dinners actually began because I was donating the produce to a local soup kitchen and homeless shelter, and one day we came with big baskets of vegetables to donate, and there was a sign on the door that said that they had closed due to lack of funding. And so a large grant for them had fallen through. I was really concerned about what was happening to everyone who relied on the soup kitchen for a meal. And so I thought about it, and I thought, I have all of these beautiful vegetables in the garden, and my friends are so amazing and supportive. So what if we came together and cooked our own meals and provided them for people in need in the community? And so that's kind of the thought process from where the Katie's Crops dinners were born. And we've been doing them for over 5 years now. And we've changed locations multiple times, but we have been able to stay in the community. And we've had people coming to these dinners for over 5 years now. So it's really incredible because I love getting to see all the guests and hearing their stories and hear how they're doing. And if they get jobs and things like that, it just makes me so happy to have kind of like a second family.
That's pretty amazing. So you have Katie's Crops Gardens all over the United States, from Maine to Hawaii. How have all of these gardens started? Does someone approach you, or do you find a local person? And how can someone listening start a Katie's Crop Garden?
So if anyone listening wants to start a Katie's Crops Garden, we have grant cycles where kids can apply to become a Katie's Crops grower. And all of the information for this is on our website, which is katiescrops.com. And kids can go there, and there's an application. And we open the cycles usually towards the end of the year so that kids can start growing for the next year's growing season. So if anyone's interested, there's definitely all the information on our website. And I would encourage people to go and check it out.
And what are the ages? Is it 9 to 18 that can start?
9 to 16.
9 to 16.
Because our grants are sustainable. So if a kid applies to be a cash crop grower and join the growing family, they can receive funding year after year to continue their garden and to expand their garden. So we try to make it ages so kids start and they have a couple years before they go off to college so they can get established and maybe pass it down to a friend or a family member.
Cool. And what was your inspiration behind making Katie's Crop something for kids rather than everyone in general? Was it just that you were young at the time and wanted to encourage other kids, or what was the reasoning behind that?
The reasoning behind wanting to have other kids be a large part of Katie's Crop was the fact that when I started, I was so young, and if it wasn't for the support of everyone in my community getting behind me and believing in me as a kid, I wouldn't be where I am today, and I wanted to be able to support other kids because kids are absolutely incredible, and they can make such a huge difference in the world, and so I just love being able to support kids and having them be able to make a difference in their community and kind of pay it forward and thank everyone who was there for me when I was younger.
That's awesome. So clearly you've thought a lot and learned a lot about the state of hunger in this country. What do you think are some of the big obstacles today to feeding those in need?
I think that one of the things that I've seen is just the price of fresh vegetables and fresh food is so expensive, and it can be hard for people to afford to buy the proper nutritional items that they need, like fresh vegetables and fresh fruit. And so when they're going into the store, if they don't have a lot of money, it's easier for them to pick up something that's packaged and processed and that's not as healthy for them and doesn't give them the proper nutrients that they need than it is to be able to purchase fresh produce. That's what kind of like what we've seen as one of the biggest obstacles for people who are struggling with food on their table.
Awesome. So I know that you're working with Sub-Zero right now on a special project called Fresh Food Matters. And basically the gist of it is that every time someone uses the hashtag Fresh Food Matters on social media, Sub-Zero will donate $5 to Katie's Crops, up to $25,000, which would help fund 25 new gardens. So can you tell me more about that campaign and how you first got connected with Sub-Zero?
So Sub-Zero reached out to us and told us about the Fresh Food Matters campaign and was interested in having Katie's Crops be a part of it. And then when they learned more about Katie's Crops, they decided that they wanted their campaign to help benefit Katie's Crops, help us start 25 new gardens. So we're so blessed to have their support, and there's also short films interviewing people with different perspectives about food on their website that people can check out to kind of learn more about different perspectives on food and the Fresh Food Matters campaign. But definitely, if anyone wants to use the hashtag to support Katie's Crops, that would be incredible.
Awesome. So if you're listening, make sure to use the hashtag Fresh Food Matters to help Katie raise that $25,000. So, Katie, it's time for the fun part of the show. We call it the speed round. So I'm going to throw you out some quick questions and just give me the first thing that comes to mind.
All right. I'm ready.
Okay. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Chocolate.
Cup or cone?
Cone.
What kind of cone?
Waffle cone.
Favorite band right now?
One Direction.
Oops. Well, rest in peace, One Direction. Are you a dog person or a cat person?
Dog person.
Do you have a dog?
Yes.
What's its name?
Boo Boo.
What kind of breed is it?
A Shih Tzu.
Oh, cute. What show have you been binging lately on Netflix?
Grey's Anatomy.
Love that show. What is one place that you're dying to travel next?
New York. Even though I go there a lot, I love New York.
Well, when you do, come visit us for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
If you could only eat one vegetable for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Cabbage?
Well, that makes sense. Katie, thank you so much for calling in. It was so great to talk to you, and we hope it's a great summer for all your gardens.
Oh, thank you so much. It was so great to talk to y'all.
And good luck with your senior year.
Thank you.
All right. To learn more about how you can start your own Katie's Crops garden, visit katiescrops.com, and that's crops with a K. We'll be right back with the latest installment of Mimi Sheridan's 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die.
Boys and girls are on fire tonight. Whole world's shaking, freaking, baby, and we're on fire.
beginning as Balducci's Fruit Stand in Greenwich Village 70 years ago, Baldor Specialty Foods has been curating and delivering the highest quality foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chefs rely on Baldor for the freshest and most seasonal ingredients, along with new and exciting items that you just can't get elsewhere. Baldor's ordering process is designed with a chef's schedule and priorities in mind to get you what you need when you need it. Baldor is the trusted resource and partner for the region's top chefs. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton. I'm the author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die. Here's one to get you started. Peach Melba. A perfect sun gold peach, peeled and poached in vanilla syrup. A crimson puree of fresh uncooked raspberries. A scoop of vanilla ice cream. Created by a French chef working in a London hotel in celebration of an Australian diva, this luscious summer dessert that is Peach Melba could be considered a tri-country triumph. Nellie Melba was the name of the celebrated opera star. Born Helen Porter Mitchell in Melbourne in 1861, she adopted her chosen name to honor her birthplace long before she became famous. The generally accepted story is that Auguste Escoffier, then the chef at the Savoy Hotel in London, heard her sing at Covent Garden and was inspired to create the dessert for a party she attended in 1892. Whether the hotel manager, a man named Cesar Ritz, who would soon open a hotel or two of his own, asked him to do so is still open to question. Whatever the case, the result is an irresistible combination of sweet tart peach, soft fruity berries, complemented with smooth ice cream. Apparently, the dessert proved too tempting for the luxury-loving diva, and because she ate too much and became seriously overweight, Escoffier created in her honor Melba Toast.
Oh my God, that was a funny one. Thank you, Mimi. Be sure to pick up Mimi's book, 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, at your favorite indie bookstore. Thank you to our sponsors for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb, Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Start your journey to become a natural food chef today by visiting ngihca.edu. Prince Street, a fresh podcast with a culinary heart. For more, listen live from princestreet.com or download the Prince Street podcast from iTunes. Baldor Specialty Food curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com. Thanks to everyone for listening. You're the bomb.
Hi, my name is Dara, and I am the Skinny Pig, food blogger, recipe creator, and at Skinny Pig NYC on Instagram. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe and learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. And you know who I think is the bomb? Emily Highland from the Pizza Loves Emily Empire. Aside from being just an awesome human being, she works pretty much nonstop with her husband Matt for their two restaurants, Emily and Emmy Squared in Brooklyn, just crushing the pizza game every single day. And anyone who loves pizza would also love Emily.